All right, Selma, this whole thing, I appreciate you being a part of it. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get some of our history of Miccosukee documented. And I know that you haven't been here all your life, but you grew up here.
Right.
And
right.
Your family is a part of here. So just get started. Just tell me something about yourself. What's your name? And maybe tell me when you were born.
Yeah. Well, my name is Sam Wilson. I was born 1941 down there on Ring Oak Plantation. And I grew up and I went to the old corn cart school for a while. And I left there and I worked to the plantation for probably 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left and went to the city of Tallahassee. I worked there for a year and a half. And from that point, I moved to Newburgh, New York in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed there till 99. I moved back mm-hmm. here and been here ever since and happy to be back home.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No. Mm-hmm. I would just say it was a lot of fun growing up here in Miccosukee. As you might already know, we grew up on a farm ourselves and waiting for the plantation. I didn't go to school that much.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth grade education, that's not very much today, but at that time, that was what we had to do because, we had to do what our parents told us to do. And,
right.
They didn't have a lot, and they didn't know nothing but farming, and you as a child, you got to do what your parents tell you to do.
Right.
And we did that, but as we got grown, we did very well for ourselves because realizing if you don't mind work and you can make it any place you go, it makes a lot of difference how much education you got, but if you have a lot and don't do anything with it,
right.
You're just worse off as a person that don't have any. So, you know, I learned one thing in life, you take what you got and make the best of it.
Right. One of the things I admire about you and others is, you know, the fact, and I include my dad in this, that you all didn't get very much education. I think my dad went to fifth, you went to sixth,
mm-hmm.
but that was not something that you let define you.
Right,
you
know, right.
You went on and you made a life, you did things, you became, I would say, successful wherever yeah. you were. And that's something that you should be proud of. I'm proud of it for you all.
Yes.
Because I remember, I don't remember, but you had all these things against you, my dad, several people in mm-hmm. that era, that you just, the opportunity to get an education wasn't there.
No.
And yet, you didn't stop learning just because of the formal education. You still learned.
And it's true. Then sometimes hearing the older people make remarks, that didn't help any either. They would make remarks sometimes like, you might as well let them work in the field and thing because they're not going to be able to ever do anything with their education anyway. So that was their way of thinking at that time because when they was coming through, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's the way it was. So they just assumed that's the way it would always be.
Right.
So, but that's still not an excuse for me or anyone that don't have a good education because there have been so many opportunities and it still is today.
Mm-hmm.
A person wish to get that, so I really don't hold that against my parents. They were good parents. They did what they thought
yes,
was
they
best,
were.
And I had the opportunity since I left home that I could have been a professor if I wanted to, but mm-hmm. it was my choice. I chose not to do it. I got lazy, I guess. And when you get a certain age and you have let something pass you by,
mm-hmm.
you kind of embarrassed to go back to try to catch up, you know, and that's kind of what happened, I think, with a lot of us. But
yeah,
like your dad, he was quite a bit older than I, but I think he probably felt like I felt, you take what you got and make the best of it.
Yeah, yeah. At some level, feeling inadequate because of the lack of education. But then again, not recognizing how proud I was of
yes,
them, and,
yes,
and of
yes,
people like
yes.
yourself too, that, you know, in spite of what you didn't have, you still made good and,
yeah.
you know, raised families and everything. So I guess if there's an aside, I'd like to just say I'm proud of what you all accomplished.
Yeah, can say I'm proud of what your father and his brother, that what they accomplished, because all of his kids, all his siblings, they got college education, did very well for themselves. And that speaks high volume, because a lot of time, if you don't have it, you don't know the importance. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere they seen that it was necessary to make sure their kids got what they needed.
Right. Right.
And that's something you always got to be proud of, if nothing else.
That's right.
You had an opportunity. Now, if you blow it, that's your fault.
Right.
You know what I mean?
that's true. So you mentioned that you were born on the Ring Oak Plantation,
yes,
right over there.
Yes.
I know that that your father worked. Did you live on the plantation? Did you work on the plantation? How tell me something about that plantation.
Well, I lived on the plantation. He was a caretaker of the three houses that they had to maintain. So when the Yankee people, they called them, would come down for the winter when they were hunt, he was a caretaker of those, mm-hmm, houses, you know, and he was responsible for keeping the ground and,
mm-hmm,
and everything around there. And quite nice. He made us work as hard as he worked, of course.
Of course.
But after I grew up, probably 16 or 17 years old, I started working for the plantation on the farm up there. They called it the barn at that time. That's, mm-hmm, where he kept all the equipment, the tractors and whatnot. It was probably about 7 or 8 of us guys working there. Myself and T-Bone Walker, Sonny Murray, mm-hmm, Brother Hall, Cornell Smith, and another guy named, his last name was Smith, their nickname was Pluto, but that's not what, mm-hmm, his real name, but most of those fellas is going on now, but we planted a lot of corn and stuff like that, and we gathered and we put in long hours. We would ride tractor from 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the afternoon for $4 a day, for $22 a week. And when I left there, the misunderstanding, I had to take off one day to go get my driver license changed. And when I got my paycheck, I was up 2 hours. And well, $2, that's me a half a day, of course.
Yeah.
So I would question the boss man, which before I got one, why would I shorten the the $2? And his wife took off. She said, well, you took off last week to go get your driver's license it changed, and we ducked you for a half a day. I said, well, I was driving a truck taking corn to Thomasville, and I drove through lunch hour. Anytime we didn't knock off anything, I said, on overtime, and I never got paid for that, and you're gonna duck me for 2 days, a half a day pay like that. And he lied. He said, well, if you don't like well money things here, you can get you something else to do, but not. I said, I think that'll be the right thing for me to do right now. And that's when I left in 1961, that's when I left the,
mm-hmm,
plantation there, because with all the hard work, but I left some things out before then. I became, when I first started driving the tractor, then an old fella used to work there named Will Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
He was a caretaker of that house and fueling the tractors and all that kind,
right,
of stuff. And when they passed away, they gave me that job. I had to take care of that property and feed the horses and all that stuff. And being about 18 years old at that time, a couple of times I forgot to feed the horse, and we went to the movies and whatnot. And I got back that Monday morning, the boss asked me, he said, did you feed the horse last night? I said, yes, I did. Quite naturally, I was lying, of course. He said, I don't believe so, because the horses hollered all night because they were hungry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then the very next week, I done the same thing. I forgot to feed the horses. So they took me down from being the lot man and put me back on the tractor again, and I was out in the field. But when I was a lot man, I had a good deal I like to do, cut the grass around and fuel the tractors. And when they went out in the field, I didn't have anything to do but goof around until, you know, maybe they come in the afternoon and all that kind of stuff. And I think I got that opportunity because of my father and my mother. They mm-hmm. worked on that plantation for years, and my sisters, all, practically everybody in my family was there at one time or another. So I guess that's why being so young, it gave me that responsibility, but I was too young to.
But you blew it.
I blew it, so, you know. But they was good. A lot of things has been reported by the plantation, not really true. Like some people think that they lived it really in slavery and you was just treated like an animal, but we never was treated that way. We had everything that we wanted. We had running water and no plumbing. And
when a lot of other people didn't have that.
I know. And whenever we needed, like when we got our first car, you go to town and you pick out what you want and you get it, and they'll take it out your pay till you pay for it, of course. It took you forever, but you know, that's the only way you were going to get your car, you know. And, and back then, I know a couple of guys used to drink and they'll get arrested and whatnot, and they'll get put in jail. But at that time, all the boys had to do was make a phone call over there and they would let them out. That's no longer the case.
No.
But they treated us very well. We were able to farm for ourselves after getting through applying for them. We can apply for ourselves like 1 o'clock at night and whatnot. We didn't have to pay for anything but our grain. We didn't have to pay for no fuel or nothing like that.
Oh, so they let you use their equipment?
We use their equipment on their, with their property. We can farm as much as we wanted to. Plant a little corn for ourselves to sell and whatnot. And like I said, the only thing we pay for is our fertilizer and grain, but the fuel and the tractor. And we didn't have to rent no property from them. We could use as much as. So we were treated very nicely, I thought, you know. And I enjoyed working there at that time. But as time passed, you know, you want more money, you need more money.
Right.
And I know making $4 a day wasn't going to cut it, you know. So when I went to the city, they were making $1.50 an hour, and I thought that was pretty good money at that time, you know.
Yeah, you make the whole day's wage in 3 hours.
And when my brother came home, he was working out of the local 17 in Newburgh there, and he came down and he was growing $54 a week on unemployment, and I was working for the city, $4 a week for $52 a week. I said, now something wrong with this picture. So when he got ready to go back, I left here with $150 in my pocket. All I wanted to do was get out of here, you know what I mean? And when I got there, though, I was really surprised. New York wasn't what I thought it were. We got out of the car and the sidewalk was all broken up and cobbled because they used all them slate stone. And I wasn't used to that. I'm used to smooth concrete and stuff. And I looked around, I said, is this New York, you know? So, but I was stuck, didn't have enough money to come back, so I had to stay there.
Yeah.
And then I got a job, and the first year, though, I didn't make no more than I made here, but I had to work, so I was working for $1.50 an hour. And in 1963, I wanted to come home and get married, so I asked the boss for a layoff slip, so I can come home and get married and all that stuff. He said, well, you don't need that. He said, when you get there, just tell them that, you know, I laid you off lack of work and all that stuff. So I thought that was cool, so I came out and I got married and kept signing up for a check and then getting nothing. I got a wife, can't take care of myself, and I can't take care of her either, so. When I went back to the unemployment, I was about the third week, I asked him, I said, well, how long did it take you to get an out-of-town check? He said, you're not getting a check yet? I said, no, I hadn't received anything. We'll put a tracing on it, and we'll let you know next week when you come in. So you had to go in every week at that time. So when I went in the next week, she said, Mr. Wilson, you won't be getting a check. You've been suspended for a year. I said, how have I been suspended? I never drew nothing. But your employer told us that he had lots of work, but you left to come find here for personal reasons, so therefore you're suspended for a year for that in unemployment. So when I got back, I had to go to a hearing at the post over there, and my former boss were there with two Italian Masons. They stated that they had lots of work, but I left to come for personal reasons, and Therefore, I was suspended for a year, and then I had to pound the street to try to find whatever I could. And
wow.
We used to unload soda water bars off a truck. At that time, you could come in on a tractor and trailer, and I would help unload them and do whatever I could do to get a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was staying with my parents. They were taking care of her because I wasn't able to do it. So until I got this job with Joe Bucciarelli,
mm-hmm.
and he the one that almost killed me, but it was a job.
Mm-hmm.
And when he suspended me, that's the same guy I'm talking about. What I'd say that he had lots of work. So the next year, I went back and I was looking for a job. So the unemployment sent me to an asphalt plant, and I went there for 2 days. And I got a telegram from a master tile place. That's where my older brother was working at, Arthur Lee. So that's where I wanted to work. So the third day I went home, I had a telegram saying come to work for them. So I went in that next morning and told the boss that I wanted my pay because I was leaving to go to work for this tile place because mm-hmm. that's where Arthur Lee was working. He said, look at Sam, he said, you're a hell of a worker. I'd like for you to stay if you would. I'd like to keep you, but I didn't want to stay, you know. He said, but look at this, it's only Wednesday, you got two more days in the week. He said, give it till Friday. If you don't like it and you want to go, so you know, I'll understand. So make a long story short, I didn't know what to do. So being from the South and being a praying man, I prayed three mm-hmm. times for the Lord to show me what my future was.
Mm-hmm.
And each time I would get into bed, it would be the asphalt plant, but I didn't want that. So the third time I got out of bed and got on my knees, I said, if you just show me one more time where my future won't bother you no more before I can get back into bed and go to sleep, I was in the plant. So I was satisfied with that, and 3 weeks after that, that's when I got my union book through the mail and all that stuff, and I became a union worker. I worked for them for 38 and a half years before I had to retire. And when I started with them, when I started at this asphalt plant, they were paying $2.50 an hour. And when my boss, when I told him about I had got my book and stuff, because I didn't know who had did this for me, and my brother didn't know. So I said, well, maybe my boss put me in the union. So when I went to work down there, I said, by the way, I got my mail yesterday. Well, you got your book now. He said, well, your rate started today, $2.50 an hour. Man, I didn't even stop for lunch that day because I never made that much, but I was so excited and whatnot. And then they had coffee break. Coffee break, I didn't know what that was, you know. I'm working and I see about 10 o'clock, these guys sitting up. I said, man, it ain't 12 o'clock. They eating and sitting down and, aren't you going to stop? I said, it ain't 12 o'clock. He said, we having a coffee break. I was really dumb to the fact that I never heard of no coffee break, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, after a few weeks after that, that's when I got a promotion. Rate kept going up, and after the 18 and a half year, my regular salary was $28 an hour when mm-hmm. I left. And we did a lot of overtime, and sometime I would be making triple time on the weekend. And I would make $60 an hour. You know, I never had dreamed of making that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a good life in there, you know, cars, motorcycle, and something with her. You know, the boys that live in high on the hall, you know.
for an uneducated country boy, that was pretty good.
Yes, yes. And I built my first brick home in 1969.
Across from, was that across from my uncle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He built that and for me, and at that time the house only cost $28,000. That was for the lot in the house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife first said, I don't want to live out here in these sticks, because we were living in the city. We went out there, that's about 5 miles out, you know.
Bill's
game. I said, but you'll get used to it after a while. And about a month or two, she wouldn't want to live in no other place other than that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You get adjusted wherever you are, and
that's true.
You become your home. And
that's true. Let's talk a little bit more about here. I know you said you didn't go to the sixth grade, but what do you know about the schools that were in this particular area? When you went to school, it was Concord?
Yes.
Concord? Mm-hmm. What did you know about this particular school at that time?
Well, the only thing I knew about this particular school, it was particularly white, mm-hmm. and with no black attendant at that time. And we would get the books that they had read through and whatnot, then they would send them down to
Concord. To Concord. They were passed down.
Right. And some of the teachers, what was coming from Tallahassee out there at that time, they really wasn't interested in the kids learning too much, because some of them even stayed out time passed that. They didn't want to come out just for the work, and they came because they needed a job. Mm-hmm. And I know one of my teachers said, well, Wilson, you better get it because I got mine. You know, you can get it if you want it. Well, that's not nothing to tell a kid, because a kid don't know anything.
They don't know the value of it.
And mm-hmm. I bribed my teachers a lot, so I used to bring up peanuts and eggs and all kind of stuff from the farm, and they let me kind of have my way, and I didn't know no better, so, I didn't do as well as I could have done.
Mm-hmm.
As you got older, I wish that they had been more tougher with me in the work, but that's when I like to be kind of strict with my kids, because a kid don't know any better when they it's up to you to make sure that they understand the value of life and do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So.
Let me get back to the plantation life again. I know you said it was a pretty good, for y'all it was actually pretty good. But I guess when I think of plantations and what I had seen in history, I saw a lot of crops, they would raise stuff like corn or tobacco or peanuts or whatever. But it looks like the plantations now didn't seem to raise as much crops as they were more like hunting refuges. Was it that way when you were coming up, or was it really a plantation? Were they really growing stuff?
They were growing stuff, but mainly for birds. They went all out for birds.
Oh, okay.
They planted corn and stuff.
So that they could feed the quail.
Right. Yeah. And ducks, they had them duck ponds.
Right.
And we used to drain the pond, the water out of the pond in the spring, and plant it with corn.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, they had the dam, and you let the water go back in there. Mm-hmm. That way it wasn't either legal. You were feeding the duck, but the game, you couldn't do nothing about it because the corn would grow it up there.
Right.
You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. that was the main obvious, and that's what it is all about now. They don't care nothing about anything else but hunting. They love game.
Right. That's what I kind of thought. Right. Plantation in slavery time was for food, but mm-hmm. plantation now is basically for recreation.
That's what it is. It really uh-huh. is. We used to have to pick up dove, like when they shoot the dove, we would run out and pick them up, mm-hmm. bring them back for them. And duck hunting, you pushing them out there in the lake at that time, they didn't have, I guess they don't even allow you to use the gas in your not really.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes your hand would be so cold you can't hold it, you call it the star pole, because you were pushing them and whatnot. But you really didn't mind it, because that stuff didn't last but a short period of time.
Right, when it wasn't long.
Right, mm-hmm. And during the summer months, a lot of time we didn't have much to do. We goofed around, cut wood and all that kind of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a job to make you lazy, because you didn't, if it wasn't farming, you didn't have to worry about being there quite 7 o'clock. There wasn't nobody going to say nothing.
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. So when I left there and went to the city, it was a different story. It was 8 o'clock, you had to be there, and at 12:30, you were back out there. It wasn't no 12:35 or something like that,
No leeway, yeah.
But it's had its drawback, but it's had its good points too,
mm-hmm.
So
most of the farming you did for if you did serious farming, it was for yourself, what they allowed you to do.
Yeah.
They would let you take the tractor and you would grow your own corn, your own mm-hmm. over, your own collard greens or whatever.
Yeah, and my daddy planted a lot of cotton, which I hated. We used to have to pick the
cotton. So you got your cotton was your cash crop, that's what y'all sold?
That was my dad, but I didn't plant that myself. The corn was for me, but not that cotton, I couldn't stand that.
Mm-hmm.
But, That's what we did. We plied the mules, of course. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people ain't heard of the mule, but walking behind that mule all day long wasn't on farm either, you know.
Tell me about that. Let me tell you my own experience with the mule. You know, I never successfully plowed a mule. My granddaddy always had a tractor. So, when I got to be big enough, I probably 10, 11, daddy got a tractor. But, you know, I remember people like Mr. John Reynolds, who lived right up the road from us on the old Centerville Road, and my granddaddy in some cases, and my grandmother's folks. They had mules, and I could see them plow this mule. They would take that turn plow, plop it right down, and go from here to the end of the road. It was as straight as an arrow.
That's right, that's right.
I tried to do that. I got behind the mule. I could not hold that thing straight. How could y'all hold it straight all day long?
But what you do, you get your foot real straight. You focus something on the other end.
Yeah, but that didn't keep the plow straight.
Oh yeah, see, when you focus something, just like right now, if you were gonna lay off a line, you wanna do something, you pick out an object and you're gonna keep your eye on that, and mm-hmm. when you get there, it's gonna be straight. And once you get your foot real straight, then all the rest of them gonna come pretty, because it just you just know by how far to be for the next group.
See, I just never learned enough.
Well, we grew up with a hole in your hand trying to hold that plow, you know.
Yeah.
Turning land all day long, walking behind a turning plow with acres of land, that wasn't no fun, but you had to do it. And
you had to do it, right.
You know, you had to side this stuff, they call it siding the corn and all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, I remember all of that.
Laying it by, it was a lot of hard work at that time, but I don't mind it now because it taught me how to work, and mm-hmm. that's what got me through life, being able to work when you're not afraid of work, you can
right.
comfortable all a lot. So, but the tractor was a modern thing. I remember when my dad got a riding cultivator. Man, that was like we had a tractor. You know, you can sit up there on a cultivator and look down at your crop, and you had your foot pedal, and you can kind of guide the plow which way mm-hmm. you wanted to go and whatnot. And you had good mules for farming. You train your mule when you said G, you don't have to move the line. He's gonna move over to the right, and you tell him how a mule got a lot of intelligence. Mm-hmm. And they'll go to the left. Whoa, that stop. That mean go. So you know, they put intelligence. Some mule they can travel. We had one mule try to step on every grain or something he got because he didn't want to have to do much. he tried to stomp it down, but. They were pretty cool then.
But you knew all about that, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't fun at that time, but when I look back over my life now, it wasn't as bad as I thought it were at that mm-hmm. time. You know, at that time I thought it was real bad.
Well, how did y'all get along? Get around? Did you get? Did you always have a car, or did
no,
you?
No. We my brother and I, we didn't get a car until we were probably about 17, we got one together. Mm-hmm. But we rode bicycles, you know, and we had second-hand bicycles, hand-me-down, went on brand new bicycles. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we had to wrap the rim with a rubber inner tube because, you know, the tire was bad and you didn't have no, you know.
Yeah, you couldn't fix it.
And you made your toys, and you shot marbles, and you it wasn't all this stuff like the day every yard, the day they got grass right up to the step.
But what I remember about us, grass was a bad thing.
Grass wasn't nowhere near right up to the house. It was dirt. Mm-hmm. You played all day long out there when you wasn't working, so mm-hmm. grass couldn't grow there.
And we used to, did y'all have to do things like sweep the yard?
Oh, yes, sir.
Because I remember, you know, you go and get some kind of sagebrush stuff.
Dog fiddler.
Yeah. And you tied it together.
Yes, sir. And straw.
And straw was used as a
broom.
That's what you used to broom inside.
Yeah, yeah.
You get straw that's about this long yeah. and you make it into a round
right.
thing and tie it.
Sweep the floor.
Sweep the floor.
And that dog fiddler, what you sweep the yard with. Right. You know, like that. But at that time, you know, everything you ate practically came out the farm. All your grain, your blackberry, your figs, your pears, and we kill the hog for your your pork and your lard and all your meat sources and stuff. And I remember my dad though didn't buy anything but sugar. Everything else, your syrup and all that stuff. We grew that.
You grew everything.
You had your eggs and your chicken, all this stuff. So
when you kill the hogs, y'all used to smokehouse like we did.
We smokehouse, but you send it out and have it cured.
Y'all were having a hog, we cured.
Yeah, and then we hang it in the smokehouse and it'll stay there all summer, hot as it'll be out there.
That's right, and it stays.
My daddy smoked some of the meat. They used different wood and stuff
to smoke
it. I didn't understand the smoking part, but that stuff will last you all summer. You didn't have to refrigerate it or nothing like that.
I know, that's what I remember. You put them hams and that side of bacon up there and all of that, and you, if I remember correctly, and maybe with y'all, we would hang it all up, salt it down, start the fire, and probably smoke it for like 3 days or something in there.
Yes.
And you're right, after it's there, that stuff will be there for 6 months.
You know, you can go out there and cut a piece of the ham or something and eat it raw, just like that. And sometimes, I guess they were maggot, but they call it skippers. Sometimes you might get a few skippers.
You just cut that part out.
You cut that out, that didn't mean nothing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was quite an experience at that time. Growing up on the farm.
Yeah.
And I love farm life now. That's the reason I do a lot of stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
I probably shouldn't be doing, but I guess if it's in you.
Isn't it funny? You ran up to New York to get away from it, and then you came back to it.
Yeah, doing it now because I don't have to do it, so I love it.
Yeah.
I plant a lot of vegetables for people to enjoy. I don't try to sell anything.
Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're
talking about. Whatever. I think I look at it like this. When the Lord bless you to do certain things, he wants you to bless other people.
Right.
Because he didn't have to bless me to be able to do this. So that's the way I look at it. And it's given me a good feeling when I know I can do something like that and help somebody else that may be a little unfortunate.
Right. Back to the farm. When y'all were on the farm, did y'all pick stuff like blackberries or pecans and all that for school, back to school? Well, we did for back to school money.
Yeah, that's how we got us brought out of school club a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Pecans and whatnot.
Pecans and blackberries during the summer.
Yes, and we used to dig what they called maggots. That was the base down that people used to go fishing with.
Right.
And they would pay a penny a piece, and if you get 100 baits, you got $1, you know, and all that stuff.
Dollar was money back then.
It was a lot of money. You know, you could take a nickel and buy a lot of stuff that was put in the store, the big old round wheel cookers and all that kind of stuff. But I remember my aunt and all used to come down and they'd be glad to watch their car for a quarter. If you throw a quarter at somebody now, they was not
going to pick it up.
Oh, God. But yeah, we did all of that. Blackberry, my mother used to can those things, and blackberry dump, what they call it. That's something good even today. I don't mess with that, but I do the figs and the pears and stuff like that.
What you said earlier is that your parents rarely bought anything. Bought sugar and maybe a few other things like that. It was the same with us.
We didn't have to buy butter because we had a cow. We churned you skim the milk, and then you churn it and make the butter.
Right.
And we'll drink the buttermilk and make the buttermilk biscuit, they call it, and all that stuff.
Let me ask you this. We used to have something, it was, for us, it was fun back then. Milk and bread.
Yes, it was. That was a meal back then. They had only fun. That's what you ate there.
Cornbread that you broke up. If it was a little old, broke that cornbread up, poured milk over it, and you ate it like a cereal, right?
Yes, and it was good. And the clabber milk.
It had to wait till the chunks
And the clever milk was almost like Jell-O that day, you know, you could dip it up with a spoon, it would be shaking like this, but it was good, you know, you put the bread and stuff, then we'll put a little cream with that, a little milk, and, you know, it was just, that was the way of life, you know. And we ate everything moved in the woods, squirrel, turtle, well, they call them coodles or whatever, you know, rabbits.
Don't forget the coons and possums.
Oh yeah, coons and possums. It just did nothing move that we didn't hardly eat at that time.
You had to get that protein somewhere.
Oh yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think people were much more healthy back then than they are now, really, I think so.
Well, I think so. Or I tell you, they didn't have a lot of different kinds of chemicals and stuff in it. Whatever was out there was just what was out there. What about the things that we would do each year? Like, y'all were on the plantation, but did y'all raise hogs? Did you do hog killings?
Just our own hog. We didn't raise none for the market. He would just raise hogs to kill for the family. We would kill like maybe four or five at a time.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Did everybody kind of come and help out with that?
Yes. Your neighbors and everybody, you know, they almost had like a similar line, you know, all the women would get together. And that's where they were cleaning, I hate to say it, but
go ahead and say
to make it chitlin, you know, when they used to rain all that stuff out and all that.
That was part of it. I mean, believe it or not, that was, I kind of got stuck with that.
Yeah.
You kill the hog,
and
they're looking, they don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But, they do know what you're talking about. But yeah, you have to go and you dig a pit somewhere, get water and pour in it.
All that waste that was.
Yeah.
You didn't throw away anything.
Nothing on the hog, no.
The head, everything. You made the hog head cheese and whatnot. Right. So. And I used to love the homemade liver pudding. You can't buy that kind of liver
pudding. Can't find it in Holland nowhere. Yeah. But, you know, and what I remember too, when we would kill the hog, one of the things you would do is after you had, you know, gutted the hog and butchered him, somehow or another you always got the liver and you cooked that over a fire.
We used to play like the Western people with take a stick and hold it on the fire and cook it like that. And either because you know you played cowboys and things,
oh,
you didn't
yeah.
have no call or nothing else. You just,
it was kind of a simple life, but
yes.
sometimes I actually miss it now.
Yes, you do. You do. You look back, and it wasn't as bad as it seemed to have been at that time. Mm-hmm. You know.
Did y'all grind cane also?
Yeah, you made our own syrup and stuff like that. And my dad made his home brew, and he was drinking before it got made good. So. they'd take corn, and I don't know what all they would put in it, and set it behind the stove where it would get warm and help it.
Have it ferment, Did he use the buck from the cane to also make something like that?
The skimming, they would make all that stuff, but I didn't know how to do it at that time. I was too young.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of whiskey steel at that time.
Yeah.
They were drinking nothing but moonshine back in them days, you know.
Right.
But, because that's the only transportation we had was mule and wagon, and we used to go to church with the mule and wagon, and we played across the road, that tidy wagon, the mules and things like that, like they parked the car today, you know. And after the church was over, everybody get in their wagon and head back home. And my dad would go to the gin with a load of cotton, with a bale of cotton, and we would be so excited because we'd leave the house like maybe 5 o'clock that morning, and we would be sleeping on that bale of cotton, you know, while the mules and things were going to Metcalf.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then our reward was they would go across the street there and buy that cheese in a big wagon wheel cooker or whatever it
called. Oh, yeah.
And man, we looked so much forward to that. That was nothing but the truth.
That was your outing, huh?
That was it. That was it. Yeah, we looked it forward. They said you were going to the gym tomorrow, you couldn't sleep that night. You couldn't wait.
Wow. The things that got you excited back then.
Oh yes, and we come a long ways, and I remember like going to the movies, you know, you had to go in one side and
right.
went on another side, and the water fountain, you drank here, and we had to go around the back, and even in restroom, you know, like the restroom would be here, you always got to go around the back, and there wasn't no such thing, you're gonna walk in a place and eat like you can do now. And when I first started driving from Newburgh back here, we always packed our lunch because here and there, it wasn't gonna stop no place to.
Right. I heard that a lot of people had to do that, and also that sometimes they had to find friendly, if they had to stop over the way, they had to find a friendly family or something, because a lot of times they couldn't, or a hotel that would, if the few were that were black owned, because
Even thought of that, students from Pittsburgh Cross. We never even planned to stop over. Would take like maybe 24 hours and
just drove
straight through. We would stop and eat and just keep. And my wife used to drive a lot for me, and I would take a little nap while she was doing it. So, you know.
And I guess part of the reason was because it wasn't necessarily safe.
No, it wasn't.
You didn't have the privilege of stopping at a hotel.
You didn't, you didn't trust a lot of time. If someone you stopped to eat, you didn't know what you might be eating. So we just always packed the lunch before we left, and when we felt like eating, we would stop at some place and eat, and then we'd get back on the road again. So. And I always stopped at a big gas station. I never stopped at a little side of the road thing. I never do that to get gas.
You wanted to be able to leave it, right?
You better believe it. So you always want to stop at a big public place where, you know, you feel kind of safe getting your gas and stuff. Mm-hmm. But things are so different now, though. You know, you can.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the kids now don't appreciate what people in your generation and older had to endure so that they could have the privilege of saying, I won't take that.
Yeah.
Remember? Because they had to take it or we wouldn't be here.
That's true. And a lot of my age people hadn't taken the time to teach our kids the history that they should know, like our parents did us. You know what I mean? How could your kid know if you don't teach them, if you don't tell them?
Right.
And that's really so much disrespect for everything now, because they grew up with like a wild flower, you know, no discipline, no training, just, and unfortunately, it's not a lot of time, it's not the kid's fault, it's the broken home that they came out of. And we were fortunate to grow up in a home with two
parents. Yeah.
And with love. We didn't have a lot of money. My parents didn't have a lot of money, but there was a lot of love and harmony there. And that's what it's all about. I'd much rather have love than have money.
Oh, yeah. And intact families was very helpful because, you know, I know some people didn't have it, but I was so blessed to have both a mother and a dad that were working together to help raise us. Mm-hmm. So. You know, I count myself very fortunate, and you too, because I know you had a big family too. Speaking of families, how big was your family?
It was 16. There was 8 boys and 8 girls, but it was by 2 different women. My first sibling, their mother died after my dad had 8 kids, and then my second, I'm the second child from my second marriage. So. He always kept somebody to be on the farm, and he grew up to move out. He had somebody coming along to do his work for him, to help do the work list. But that's one thing they did teach you. And then the kids didn't eat before the parent back then. You know, I don't care how old you thought you were, you wasn't going to eat till your dad got in to eat and whatnot. We were going to eat together and whatnot. Everybody just eating
vegetables. Grab and go. Yeah, I know what you mean, because mother would make us wait till dad got home. Sometimes we'd be eating late at 9 o'clock, but we ate as a family.
And television is good, but that messed up a lot of kids too. You know, I did it with my daughter. You know, I gave her a room over there with her television and telephone, and then when she was probably about 7, 8 years old, that was a bad mistake. I would never do that again. Mm-hmm. Kid ain't got no business with a telephone and all that stuff in a room at that age, but. You know, I thought I wanted her to have so much more than I was able to have, but you need to give a kid a chance to be a a kid and then let them grow up.
Right.
And we push them sometimes a little too fast.
I'm sure. Do you know anything about getting back to plantation? Do you know anything about how the plantation got some of the land that they had? I know that it might have been in their generations for a while, but did they buy some? Did they ever get lucky and take some from people who didn't pay taxes or anything like that? Or did they ever cheat people out of it? I'm not saying any specific ones, but did all of that kind of stuff happen? Did you know?
No, I know that. There was a time when they bought some land from people, but I don't think they ever cheated anybody. They had always had a lot of land, but mm-hmm. when our person got too old to maintain it and they were going to probably lose it or something like that, they would buy it. Mm-hmm. They always had a lot of land, so they wasn't worried about 5 or 10 acres from somebody over there. And they wasn't going to buy it no way unless it was adjacent to their property.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't buy it if it was
You didn't want it, something you had to cross somebody's
right,
stuff to get
to.
Right,
they wouldn't buy it like that, but mm-hmm. if it was connected to them, then they would buy it. And, in my generation, I thought that they treated people about as fairly as you can mm-hmm. expect.
And that's good. We were talking earlier, we found out, you know, we know about the discrimination and the various kinds of lifestyle, but we also know that there were good people.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Southern people didn't care for, they called them the Yankee because they thought that they were catering to the blacks or the poor, and they didn't like that. But we worked for them and they treated you good. Nobody worked for them had to worry about a place to stay. Mm-hmm. They didn't make a lot of money, but they lived it on the property, you know, in the house free and all that. So when you add all that stuff up, mm-hmm. you actually were making more than you thought you were because you wouldn't pay rent this
right.
So, you know, it means a lot.
So everything is not always as bad as it may look.
It's not as good as it might look sometimes, too, you know.
Right, that's
you
true,
know,
too.
People used to say the grass looked greener over there, but it's not as green as it looked like it is.
That's
know?
Right. Let's get to one other thing, church culture. I remember when we were young, one of the big things that used to take place, and I think in some places it still does, revival meetings during the summer. Those were kind of a big deal, especially you went to St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of times, sometimes y'all would come out after a revival with 15 or 20 candidates for baptism. Yeah. So just tell me a little bit about the church culture.
Well, they had what they call a morning bench. Mm-hmm. When you were the center, you sat on the morning bench and you prayed to the Lord to forgive you for all your sin and wash you and clean you up, change your soul and all like that. And when you confess him, then that's when you would be baptized. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to get baptized out at the Mississippi Lake.
Oh, yeah.
And that would always be on the second Sunday in September, and that would almost be like a holiday because people used to come from Miami, some every place for that baptism. Mm-hmm. And I remember before I even got saved, I used to go down and, you know, you would see the other people out in the water. And that was a day, it looked so much different from any other Sunday when they would mm-hmm. be out there, that sun be glad out of the water. And, you hear them old preachers holler about old B, and I baptized his brother, his sister, in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and they dip. That was some time, and I'm going to tell you the truth, and when I confess, that was the most joyful day in my life. I'm going to tell you, it's not like today when somebody says, I'm not saying they're not saved or nothing like that, but I don't think they have the Holy Ghost. See, you need the Holy Ghost in order to feel God present. You got to have the Spirit, you know. Mm-hmm. And you're on fire, man, and you're not. You know that hymn they sing, "I'm not ashamed of all my Lord." Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You wasn't ashamed to tell the people what you have.
Right. You're right. See, what I also remember that after revival, during revival meeting season, which was always in the summer after, I remember that the people who had found Christ would go and confess it. They would walk up to you, mm-hmm. they would hand their hand out to you, and you know, I'm so glad I got Jesus.
Yes, sir.
You know, that was one of the things that happened all through the summer.
Everybody did.
I mean, and they would walk up to a stranger and just go get the testimony.
And that was one of the things back there then, even though in the present today, the white man always respected that.
Always respected that part.
That's one of the things, because old man Reed used to own the land down there at that time. And, I think he would enjoy that baptism day more than the people that I enjoyed. You know, it would be a lot of white on the cars and everything sitting there. Look at that. They gave us respect that on that particular day. So that's one thing about the even the, some of the worst people in the world today, they respect the word of the Lord. They respect Christ. Now, that's one thing. People, that's one thing the average person respect. God, that's all, and we should, because He is the reason that we are here. But yes, but back in them days, we had people teaching you what to do after you confess. Is you got to do more than confess. You got the old
right. And what I hear you saying too is that back then. Well, now it's somewhat of a confession. It's somewhat superficial, but back then it was fundamental.
It was
a part of who you really were. You modeled your life after your faith.
That was, and you actually feel different all inside, and you don't have that hatred in your heart for anybody. You know, that's just a joyful time, and prayer could do that for anybody today. Because I know I have asked the Lord to remove a lot of things out of my heart that I know should not be there. You can't move it yourself.
Right.
And in the church today, a lot of times people will get up and say, God says, come as you are. Well, they thinking about the clothes you're wearing and whatnot.
Right.
They don't mean that.
It's beyond that.
Yes, it's going deeper than that. If I'm out there in some kind of bad habit or whatever, I can't clean myself up, so come on, let him do it. And that's what it means, but I know a lot of them think that it means you can wear jeans or sneakers or whatever. He wasn't speaking about that.
He's talking about the state of your life. The thing was, come, let him do the work,
that's
not
it.
You try to do yourself.
So you can't clean yourself up.
Well, is there anything else you would like to share? Because remember, you, at first you said you didn't know if you knew anything. You know a lot.
Well, I know I'm a big talker, my wife. But, you know, you could never tell everything from your childhood in a couple of hours, you know, like this. It's so much that you won't bother to say, like, we had made our own. You ever heard of a pack of what they call it? A pack of that was a toy you made.
No, I don't think I've heard of that.
Well, it was like a syrup can. You pack it with dirt. You put a piece of wire between it, and you pack it with dirt, and you run and you pull that. You know that was.
I do remember something. I didn't know what it was called, but yeah, I remember that now.
A pack of. And another toy we would make an iron wheel or something. You take off. Piece of number 9 wire, steel wire, and you make a crook on the end, and you can run behind it and guide that wheel.
I remember that. Right. Also, a variation of that would be, you would take something like a wagon wheel and roll it, and you had a stick, and you could just push it with the stick.
You could push it right where you want it to go and guide it with that stick, and rolling car tires. You had to make your toys there, because my parents couldn't go buy nothing like that. But it was fun, like I said, with nothing but dirt in your sand in your yard, because you played there until time to go to bed. And we had to take a bath in front of the fire with a tin tub, you know, you put the water in.
Everybody did.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, sir, then from that in the bed. So, you know, what I'm saying, and I used to wake up in the morning time cold, and I didn't want to get out to make the fire. You're laying there, you're hoping your brother get up and somebody make the fire because it was cold and all that.
Oh, I remember those days. Yeah, and I remember when you went to bed too, one of the rituals that we had a fireplace. So we'd always go, just before it's time to get into bed, we'd go toast ourselves at the fireplace, just turn around right till we get off work. They could run and jump in the bed and put the blanket on.
And a lot of the women on there, they lay with, you ever seen them with the black and to a point lay like they sitting before that fire all mm-hmm. the time with nothing down there. They would make their leg like different colors
right.
and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And we used to roast sweet potatoes in the ash there and all that kind of stuff. And we didn't think nothing about it then, and everybody, the older people, the dip snuff and stuff, and just said that they up. But you didn't think too much about it, you know. When that potato got done, you was all into it, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't eat that potato now if I would have had some in that, and I'd see somebody spitting it like that. I wouldn't eat it, but back then, you didn't think nothing about
hey,
it.
Hey, it's what you did, right? Yeah.
But that's about anything that is worthwhile talking about. You know, one other life thing, I used to say, we used to come out of the field and go down to the lake, because we lived right on the makers of the lake, mm-hmm. and catch our lunch. We would go down, and we had the boardwalk where you walk out, and we could look through the crack that a big old fly brim would be swimming around there. Mm-hmm. The water be just to clear the pool, you know. And we would put the bait down through there, and sometimes they'd come up and they'd spit it back, but we'll keep jigging, and they'll get it. And we'd catch them and pull them up, and then we couldn't get them through the crack. Sometimes it'd be too big, but it was sized with wood and was easy to cut. So we had so many holes cut in there, the boardwalk, so the people cut, they told the boardwalk down. So they cut so many holes pulling the fish up through there, but that was our lunch sometimes. You know, you come in, you go down there and catch your fish for your lunch or whatnot, mm-hmm. so.
Wow.
That was the day, so. But that's about all I got to say right now, really.
Well, you've said a lot, and you had a lot to offer, Sam. I appreciate you being a part of this. And you know, if all this goes according to plan, this will be part of the archives, and when you're dead and gone, your grandchildren will be seeing what you sounded like.
Yeah, okay, well. They say, yeah, that was my old dad. He was a mean old guy, but he was. I love him, you know. Mm-hmm. I used to say that about my dad. I said, man, that's the meanest guy ever lived. I used to run around away from home, but I didn't have no place to go, so I had to say that. Well, he was a mean man, but I understand it now. I love him in his grave because I know what it was all about. But then I didn't understand it, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, a lot of things we didn't understand. Yeah. But I appreciate you coming in and sitting for this interview.
Well, my pleasure.
And if we, you know, if we think of some other things, there might be a chance we could call you again to just, you know, brush up on something or talk about a specific subject.
Okay. And get in touch with Melissa. She can give you some insight on the Yinka themselves.
Okay.
With them.
She works with them, right?
Yeah, because we just work for them, but she was actually, and she, been there for 31 years, and she's the head cook there now, because my sister Cleo, she retired from there.
Oh, she's retired now.
Yeah, so she's the head cook there, so they can tell you a lot more about them people personalized than I could. I can't tell you much about that.
Well, that's good, because I think I even want to try to make some contact with that, with the plantation, maybe even get some of their stories if necessary. So appreciate it, Sam.
Yeah, anytime, sure enough.
All right.
Yes.